Welcome, and thank you for joining the National Multiple Sclerosis Society's MS Learn Online Internet Program. I'm Rick Turner, your host and medical correspondent. Multiple sclerosis can have a significant impact on every aspect of life, and the world of work is no exception. People with MS are experienced, well-trained, and productive workers who often retain the ability to work long after the illness manifests itself. Today, we finish our two-part series focusing on the employment rights of people with MS by discussing the Rehabilitation Act. With us again, we are happy to have as our special guest, Chuck Goldman. Mr. Goldman is an attorney in Washington, D.C., with extensive experience in disability law in both the federal government and private practice. Welcome back to the program, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Rick.
Now, I find it interesting that the Rehabilitation Act has been around actually for 20 years longer than the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, and yet, as a whole, people seem to be much more aware of the ADA. What's your take on this?
I think your take is that people are much more aware of the ADA than they are of the Rehabilitation Act, though my take is, in a nutshell, without the Rehabilitation Act, there would never have been an ADA. And let me explain why. And let me also get to your basic point of why people are more aware of the ADA than they are of the Rehab Act. And when we talk about the Rehabilitation Act, we're principally talking about a program that, a statute that, for the most part, is a program to for rehabilitative services across the country through state agencies to help people get back into the workplace. The Rehab Act actually had its origins in post-World War I with President Wilson. But the modern Rehab Act, what we're really talking about here is Section 504 that said no person with disability shall be denied access to a federally funded program or activity. And that was sort of quietly enacted in 1973. And by major contrast, in 1990, when President Bush won, first President Bush signed the ADA into law on July 26, 1990, that made page one of every major newspaper. That was the lead story in the national news on every network, and because it was the first major civil rights act in many years. And at the time, there was a record crowd of 2,000 people plus on a beautiful day in Washington. That was the biggest signing ceremony. And this was a mega event. Now, subsequently, we've had other major signings on the White House lawn that have been far eclipsed it. But at the time, this was the number one lead story. But it would never have happened if there hadn't been the Rehab Act of 73, because we got from that the principle in place legislatively that persons with disabilities were entitled to equality. And what happened after the Rehab Act passed was that many state and local governments also enacted laws to protect persons with disabilities, including persons with MS. And that helped also fast-track the ADA to enactment. And with the ADA, we went through a round of news in terms of being because it was major civil rights legislation on a national level when it was introduced, when it was signed, and then when the regulations came out in proposed form in 91 and in final form later on, so they became effective in 92. The ADA has been in the spotlight for years now since it was adopted.
So, Mr. Goldman, my question here for someone with MS: has the ADA, as a legal tool, rendered the Rehabilitation Act moot, or is the Rehab Act still relevant?
It's not moot. They're complementary. They don't supplement each other. They complement each other, as well as they both complement state and local laws.
And Mr. Goldman, what are some of the other important concepts contained within the Rehab Act with respect to employment regulations?
I think it's very important to know that the Rehab Act was the forerunner of the regulations that we saw under the ADA, because it brought us for the first time the concept of making adjustments, what we call reasonable accommodations in the workplace, to allow a person with MS to work, whether it be adding a heater or cooler fan, or adjusting their workplace, or even working at home, as long as something wasn't financially cumbersome, overly financially burdensome, which very few things are, or overly administrative burdensome to an employer. It brought the concept of reasonable accommodation to the fore. It brought the idea of privacy of your medical records, that you would tell your boss if you didn't have to disclose, but if you did, your records would be kept private. We've elaborated, and we also talked before about groups that enabled the chapters to provide services to people with MS in terms of how working out scenarios for people to disclose and how to work through difficult workplaces. And the chapters of the MS Society themselves, I know our chapter in D.C., is wonderful in terms of providing services on disclosure scenario. And people in MS support groups can talk about accommodations that work for them. Build on your own history. We've elaborated on this, and I hope people, if they miss the first tape of our discussion, Rick will access the from the libraries. But these fundamental concepts, which were developed in the 70s, and because we found as a society that you could live with the idea of reasonable accommodation, or when enabled us to enact the ADA on such a fast track rule. So the Rehab Act, particularly Section 504, was really necessary for us to get ADA into place.
Thanks very much, Mr. Goldman. We need to close now. But before we do, do you have a final take-home message for our listeners with MS who want to continue working?
I would say that these laws are an affirmation of your abilities. You know, It's really the Rehab Act, the ADA, are really misnamed. The message I would say is these are laws that should be the Americans with Abilities Act. And I would say, secondly, lawyers are not the answer. Your chapter at first, your chapter and places like the Job Accommodation Act, they have more information that's valuable to you. Look within yourselves because you can do it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Please note that the information provided to you today is based on well-researched data and professional opinion, but for individual decisions, please consult an appropriate professional. If you have a question that was not addressed, please email us at mslearnonline@nmss.org. If you'd like more information on multiple sclerosis, click on the resources link on your screen or call the chapter nearest you for an answer to your question. You can reach your chapter by calling 1-800-FIGHT-MS. That's 1-800-344-4867. You may also want to check the National MS Society's website, where you'll find more information about today's topic and a menu of other webcasts available to participate in. Funding for this program was provided as an unrestricted educational grant from these National MS Society chapters. For the National MS Society, I'm Rick Turner, wishing you health and happiness.